You're listening to the Family Podcast from PursueGod.org.
Parents, today we are going to tackle the field guide for parents, the digital world, and your kids. We're going to talk about phones. We're going to talk about social media and the dangers that you really need to be aware of before you make a decision for your kids to have a phone or how they're using it if they already have one. Now, for most of the parents out there, we did not grow up in this digital age. We did not have smartphones. We did not have social media. So we're kind of now being thrown into this situation where we're trying to figure out how to parent through technology when we really don't even understand it fully. And frankly, I think our kids understand it and are smarter than we are. So part of our conversation today is I have my son, AJ, joining us, who's almost 23 years old, was raised in the digital social media age, and is doing a ton of research and working on a devotion that goes along with his Fight Club podcast. More on that to follow in the coming months. But AJ, welcome today.
Thank you. Yeah, I appreciate the opportunity to be on here.
Yeah.
I really just feel like this is a cautionary tale. That's what I can be here as, because, you know, my parents screwed this up so bad that me and my sister are just train wrecks. And so if I could just help one person not be that way.
Well, yeah, this is what's funny. As we've prepped for this podcast, my kids are both like, I don't remember some of those rules. I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm like, I have this family podcast and then my own kids are saying that I didn't even do it. So guys, listen, I'm learning right along with you. Hopefully this will be helpful to you though, really, as like this field guide, just some questions that I think you need to ponder, especially for parents that haven't purchased a phone yet for their kids, some things to really think about. But for those that already have kids with phones, like, there's some things you really need to think about and how you're mentoring and leading your kids through this major responsibility. And AJ, tell me, what is it that you've said about smartphones that are just in every kid's pocket these days?
Yeah, it's honestly crazy. Smartphones are, I don't know if people really understand the depth and the capability of a smartphone. Like, the phone that is in my pocket, your mm-hmm. pocket, everyone's pocket right now, is literally 100 times more powerful than the computer that landed the Apollo 11 mission on the moon. So, like, what we're capable of getting at there is insane. And it's an entire other universe. Mm. I mean, people have talked about virtual reality and how you're going to be able to live a totally different life one day. We're already doing that right now. I mean, on social media, you can be a totally different person than you can present yourself in real life. And what you have access to, there are no rules. It is the wild, wild west. I mean, if you go on, especially Twitter these days, or X, the things that you can see are appalling. It's terrible. I mean, it's like you have this ability to transport yourself to anywhere in the world, especially the deepest, darkest corners. It's terrible, frankly.
Well, and honestly, what I've learned too just recently, I think it was Roblox that was in the news, that I think parents do not assume that these apps and these companies have your kids' safety in mind. Yeah. They do not. And we'll talk more in a few minutes about some of these hidden dangers that I think for a lot of parents, I know for me, like, I don't understand all the capabilities that these apps have or the connections that people can make from all over the world, and then what that can mean for kids. But I think parents, just because the government allows for these apps to be on phones, or, you know, Apple or Google puts it on there, does not mean that it's a good thing or that it has the right safety measures in place to protect your kid.
Well, right. And even more than that, it's a business. Every single one of these apps is a business. It's there to make money and to make the most money it possibly can. And the best way that I've heard this described is, if you have an app on your phone that is free, you are the product. And so for children today, like, companies are making an immense amount of money on children, and they're going to continue to, because for the first time ever, businesses can now sell the data with an entire catalog of what this person likes, what this person doesn't like, who this person is. And that's going to be valuable for the next 40, 50, 70 years, the rest of this person's life. And so there is huge amounts of money in this data. And so they don't care about the privacy of your child. They don't care about the protection of your child. They care about making as much money as humanly possible at whatever cost. Mm.
So parents, that's why today we wanted to tackle this and calling it like the field guide, just some questions that we're going to pose and some things that I think you really need to consider. Before we get into those questions, just some recent stats that we pulled, and this is crazy to me because this wasn't true when my kids were young, but 1 in 4 8-year-olds already have a smartphone, their own smartphone, not using their parents. On average, kids ages 6 to 12 are spending over 3.5 hours a day on their screen. So parents, this is what we're saying. Even if it's like your iPad or like a kid's pad that's like kids stuff, like the fact that they're on an electronic device for 3.5 hours a day, like that's, there's other implications for that. But I think it shows the pressure though that I imagine many parents are feeling, that even in elementary school, an 8-year-old, what is that, a second, third grader, is already having the smartphone. And like AJ said, this whole Wild West and this whole world that's out there that they can access through that smartphone, that an 8 to 10-year-old is not capable of, well, even middle schoolers and high schoolers aren't capable of that responsibility entirely. But parents, like, that's the deal. That's what we're dealing with. Our most elementary age kids already have a smartphone. In middle school, by the age of 12, it's around 70% are spending about 5 hours a day on their screen. And then in high school, it's not a matter if they're online. It's like how often and how long. They're spending 4 to 5 hours. Some even would say 7 hours or more online. And this even includes like the gaming community, which you were never really into the video game stuff, but I know a lot of stuff happens in the video game community mm-hmm. as well. So again, parents, it's like, I understand to set up the conversation, the stats would clearly show that most kids have a smartphone. And so I remember as a young parent being like, well, I mean, I respect this family. Their kids have a phone. You guys are coming home saying so-and-so has a phone. I need a phone. So you start to feel this pressure, like I got to get my kid a phone. So I think, AJ, for you, do you remember the first time you wanted a phone, or what your friends like who had phones before you, like what was that introducing you to?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I remember when I was in elementary school, it was right when smartphones were mm-hmm. really hitting the scene. And I remember I had a little flip phone for the longest time. That's as far back as I remember as having a flip phone. I mean, that thing could do nothing except text you. But there was always that one kid mm-hmm. that after Christmas would show up with the brand new mm-hmm. iPhone 3 or whatever yeah. it was. And it was like, oh my gosh, this is the coolest thing mm-hmm. I've ever seen. But what it really manifested, I think, is communication apps. So the pressure was like, oh, okay, you can have a phone and yeah, I can text them. But oh no, if I don't have this type of phone
exactly.
or if I don't have a smartphone, I can't have mm-hmm. this communication method. And so that's what I remember most, is feeling like this fear almost that I was going to be left out of certain social circles because I don't have a way for them to get in touch
right.
with me.
That's what I remember more in junior high, high mm-hmm. school, when it was like Snapchat was yeah. the way your sports teams would communicate. And I, you know, all I knew at the time, Snapchat was new, that it was like the disappearing messages. And so I remember Dad and I being like, we do not feel comfortable with Snapchat. And then you're coming home saying, but that's how the coach is communicating. So if I'm not on it, then I don't get the same communication yeah. or they have to think to text you. So parents, like all of this to say, like, this is the pressure that you, I'm sure, are feeling. But what we want to do today is just help you realize that even though the pressure might be there, even though the stats might say most kids already have a phone by 8 or 10 years old, even though there might be good reasons that your kids are coming home saying, I need this kind of a phone because I got to have this app, that parents, our job is to protect our kids. Mm-hmm. And if we don't do it, then we're kind of leaving our kids to figure it out. And like you said, that wild, wild west of the mm-hmm. world where you have no idea the things they're being exposed to or people they're talking to or images right. they're seeing and the damage that that does. So parents, it's worth thinking this through and being more strategic in your plan mm-hmm. for sure. Some of the things that it talks about in the research too, parents, before we get into some of the questions, is what does the research show about phone usage, about social media? I mean, it's all over the place, just increased anxiety and depression. I mean, AJ, I don't know if you've seen that with any of your friends, especially in the social media space, the comparison, like what are some of the things that you would see from your friends, the damage that social media did or has done?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I mean, the biggest one I would say is for young women. I've seen it far more in my friends that are females. And that's like the comparison culture mm-hmm. is just rampant. I mean, if you go on to social media, all you will see is like these makeup videos,
yeah.
which, you know, guys look at for other reasons.
Right.
But for women, it's like, I have to look perfect. Mm-hmm. I have to do all this right and look at this person and look at this. And so I've seen that damage friends that even today are not the the healthy members of society that they could be,
yeah,
because they got so caught up in that and, mm-hmm. and they don't know what to do with it. I think that's the bigger thing is, especially like at least now, you know, we have this podcast and, mm-hmm. and other things that you can turn to. But back then it was, I mean, there was nothing.
Right.
And so parents were, this is the cautionary tale. Parents didn't know that they needed to help their process through this.
Right. But I remember Kenzie was like sixth grade that Facebook had become like a thing. And so I'm like, okay, what's this thing? Okay, you're just sharing pictures. But as time has gone on and as these apps have come about, and even for mm-hmm. me as an adult, like looking at someone's Facebook feed or Instagram, it's like, oh my gosh, they live this perfect life. Or look at these vacations they go on. Or look how she looks in a bathing suit versus me. And it just kind of creates in you like this feeling of like you're not satisfied with your own self.
Yeah.
And the damage that does. Mm-hmm. So that's why increased anxiety and depression is a thing. I think also the focus and attention has become more and more of an issue, especially in the younger, because if all we ever do is just we're playing a video game or we're mm-hmm. scrolling that social media feed and we're never just like sitting still or we're escaping things by using social media or video games mm-hmm. or just on our phone endlessly scrolling, like kids are having more and more a hard time with attention than in school, reading, math, all of that.
Right. And I think this is where it comes into what I can speak about with men at least, or boys. And we'll get into this a little mm-hmm. bit later, but it literally rewires your brain for addiction. Mm-hmm. And so what this is teaching you to do and what it's teaching all young people to do when they get on their phone is to seek what's pleasurable and avoid what is not. Mm-hmm. And so when you get into the real world, or even when you start going to school and you're trying to mm-hmm. be able to sit down to write an essay, you're not capable of doing that because your brain is already bad at making good decisions when you're young, but you're literally rewiring it each and every day to be worse and worse and worse and worse at that. Mm. And I've seen that impact my friends who, and even myself later in life that are now adults, and they cannot function as proper human beings because their brain was rewired so bad. And not to say that that can't be fixed, but it genuinely damages them and continues to do so to this day.
Yeah. So I think parents, again, AJ, using your word, the cautionary tale, like I really do feel like parents need to be on guard here. I think you need to take a fresh look at how you viewed the phone, the internet, the social media stuff in your kids, because it's like you said, AJ, when it starts rewiring the brain and your kids are struggling then in other areas of life. I mean, I think if we know what the danger is, we respond to it. And I think for a lot of parents, like we've just kind of gone through the motions and assumed, well, everyone else is doing it. I'm sure these app companies are protecting my kid. And then all of a sudden, like you said, AJ, it's years later that all of a sudden parents are like, oh, whoa, mm-hmm. this is a problem. I mean, it's crazy to me that just in the last, 5 or 7 years, they've come out saying that pornography is a social crisis, health crisis in America. Like, duh, we've known that for many, many years, but it's like, it takes our government so long, our political figures so long to come to a conclusion to make any change.
Right.
But in the meantime, our kids are suffering from the implications of all that.
Exactly. And that's where I feel like I can uniquely speak to that as someone who worked on Capitol Hill and saw how the sausage was made in our mm-hmm. regulatory institutions. Mm. They are not at all on top of the ball in terms of this area. They're starting to catch up now, but you cannot expect the government or these big businesses to do the necessary work to protect your child. It's just simply they're behind. They got other things that they're worried about, and elections are coming up.
Right, exactly. And the money's coming.
Right.
So parents, especially if you've got kids in elementary, just be mindful of that replacement of like physical play. Like I remember my kids going in their bedroom, you know, during like a quiet time, and you guys used your imagination and you played with things. And I think we're losing sight of that with our kids. Or when we feel anxious, it's like, what do I need to do to escape that feeling? Rather than learning those mechanisms that help us to deal with emotions that are uncomfortable or scary or hard. So parents, these are just some of the things that I want you to be considering, that this isn't just a neutral influence in your kid's life. It is actively influencing, shaping, and creating pathways in their brain and affecting their identity formation and their emotions. So it's an important thing for you to be considering. So let's get into these questions. The first question is, how do you know when your kid's ready? I hear that question from a lot of parents. I remember asking it too. And honestly, the better question probably is, my child ready for that responsibility? So there's plenty of phone options out there. AJ, I know you said that a dumb phone would be better. Like if when you have kids someday, you will not let your kids have a smartphone.
Absolutely. Yeah, not at all.
So like Gab, I know, is a product mm-hmm. out there that, you know, if it's about communication with your kids, and that is a real thing, like there's dumb phones that right. you get, the flip phone, like you said, or these other products that they use. But I think it really does come down to, when is your kid ready for that responsibility? Mm-hmm. And as a parent, then it's like, are you because it could be a great way to teach your kids responsibility. Like, okay, so if you have this flip phone, first of all, you can't leave it on the floor at school mm-hmm. and lose it. Like, are you responsible to bring it home? Are you responsible to text me when I tell you you're supposed to? Are you following those basic rules? Another question to ask, are they ready for the phone? Are they ready for that responsibility? Is, do they really need it? Mm-hmm. Is it really about needing communication? I get it, for working parents, you want to know that your kid got off the school bus and is in the house. Like, again, that doesn't have to be with a smartphone, mm-hmm. but you could certainly have a dumb phone for that. And then really another question to ask is just the self-regulation. Do your kids show the ability to have self-control in other areas of their life, that now you give them this product, especially if it's a smartphone? Like, what are you setting them up for in the self-regulation? Are they going to be able to put that thing down? Are they going to pay attention to screen time? So those just are a couple of questions that really, how do you know when your kid is ready? AJ, I don't know if you have any thoughts. Do you feel like you said it was fifth grade? I remember it was late elementary when you got your first phone.
Fifth grade is when I had my first smartphone. Yeah.
Was your first smartphone. Okay.
Yeah. What I would say to this is, it's hard, I would say, for parents to be able to say, oh, you know, how can I restrict them on that? Everyone's doing it, that sort of thing. I like to liken it to a car. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't trust your kid to go drive the car down the driveway.
It's true.
Even when they get to 14 or even 15, you're like, no, I need to be in the car with you when mm-hmm. you are driving. And it's because there's a certain level of respect that you have for the power, the capability, and the responsibility that brings. And a phone is the same thing, if not more. I mean, we didn't even talk about cyberbullying at mm-hmm. all, but your kid can also be learning how to be a terrible human being online.
That's right.
So there's so much responsibility here, and you're not holding them back or making it harder for them later in life or anything like that, or setting them up for failure. I mean, what you're doing is you're preparing them for what it's going to be like to be an adult and a healthy adult.
Yeah. And I'll say one thing, parents, because I've learned this looking back, like wisdom is, you know, you can apply that knowledge over time and realize, like, there's been several things that at the time with you guys, whether it was like friends or bullying or being left out, that I just was like, this is terrible. And are my kids going to survive? And are they going to be okay? And then years later, I remember asking you guys about one of those situations and you're like, I don't even remember that. So honestly, parents, I do think that I know the pressure's on. Your kids are going to come home. They're like, everyone has a phone. I need a phone. It has to be a smartphone. I need these apps. But really, as the parents, we have the responsibility of protecting our kids. And so even though they think they need it or want it, that right. cannot be the main decision driver for you to mm-hmm. know when your kid is ready for that. You need to recognize there is danger. There is damage that can come from putting that phone in their pocket. And it's good for you to consider that, to be prayerful in that, and to talk to them about the responsibility of that.
Right.
Whenever that time is right, that you're saying, this is a responsibility, mm-hmm. and to be open about that and to talk about that.
And even past that, I would say, take it as a responsibility to talk with other parents about this. I mean, I think it's Jonathan Haidt's research where he talks about communities that have come together and parents have talked to each other and be like, hey, what do you think about not giving our kids phones?
Yep.
And so then you take away that social contagion piece and you're like, no, we're going to come together as a community and we're going to be wise together.
Yes.
And because some parents, especially parents who aren't Christians, at mm-hmm. least, are not tracking this per se. And so if you could help them be like, hey, have you looked into this? Have you researched this? And kind of open their eyes to that sort mm-hmm. of thing. You can take the pressure off of that for yourself and your kid won't be like, oh, but everyone has it.
Right. Well, and again, I think that's part of the Christian life is we don't look like the world. Mm-hmm. And so parents, like, that's part of the thing. Like, I know, buddy. I mean, I remember we had many conversations. There were movies that you guys wanted to see that your friend, you know, that we were like, I'm sorry, I know this is hard. And I know that you're going to feel left out in that. But as your parents, this is our conviction and we want to protect you. So you need to trust us in that. So parents, don't be afraid to say, I don't know that you're ready, or you're ready, but only for a dumb phone or the mm-hmm. flip phone. And we're going to stick to that. And then we'll evaluate as we go along. So parents, I mean, that really is going to be a personal decision. How do you know when your kid's ready? But I really do think you need to frame it in terms of, are they ready for that responsibility? And what does that look like mm-hmm. exactly? Okay, so then the next question is, what boundaries should be in place? So things like screen time, like parents, now my kids both say they don't remember this, but I am sure of the fact that we said to our kids, when you had your smartphone, like, you charged upstairs. Mm-hmm. You did not have your phones in your rooms at night because that's where trouble can start. So I think having clear screen time limits, you can set screen limits. They have those capabilities on the phone. You could do that for your kids. But again, I think if you do screen limits, I think that's part of the responsibility piece of training and shepherding your kids, because the goal here isn't like you just totally control them and then send them on their way to college and think that they've got it all figured out, right? It's all about training and mentoring them along. So the screen time limits, having clear rules about where the phone is in your home, at what times of day, no phones late at night, charging outside. Like, I think those are good things. AJ, would you add anything to the list that you remember?
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that I think is important to recognize here is a phone is a source of dopamine. And so you need to be careful in how you're training your child to recognize rewards and when you get rewarded for things. So one thing that I would say is no phones until you finish your homework for the night. Like, kind of practice instilling that delayed gratification mindset. And so it's not like this thing of when I'm bored or when I don't want to do something, I go to the phone and I use this and I get dopamine. And I mean, as we'll talk about a little bit later, a child's capacity for dopamine is between 2 to 4 times that of an adult's. And so when they're on there, like when you, if you were to download TikTok, I mean, I know my aunt downloaded TikTok. Yeah. She loves it. It's great. Yeah. You get dopamine hits from it. And we'll talk about why that is in a minute. But imagine that for your child is at 4 times that. And so it's really, really hard for their brain to be able to process that. And so the shorter that your time limits can be, the better. But also using that in a constructive way of like, no, 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 do your chores first and then you can have the phone. It's that sort of thing that can help them to have one, a healthy relationship with the phone, but also a healthy relationship with dopamine and rewards and delayed gratification and these other things that are important to learn as you approach adulthood.
Yeah, and it's interesting, some of the stats I was looking at, that most teenagers would say that they spend way too much time on their phone, and they're seeing it impact grades and even social relationships, because that's another piece of it. The more we're in this digital world that's not real and we can present ourselves to be a different person, our kids are not learning how to have true relationships, friendships with people, and that just creates more isolation. Okay, so social media rules then. So not just screen time, but AJ, what apps would you say parents just need to say absolutely no to? What would you say? I know this probably
all
would be
all of them. it's really hard to answer. I mean, I don't want to seem like a stickler who's like, you know, all these are bad for you. They are. They simply are. They are literally designed to be as destructive to your brain as possible because that's the only way to hook you on it and get you to come back.
Right.
All these apps are competing with each other for your attention and your child's attention. And so they're going to do whatever it takes. I mean, the really hard lines, I would say, X, Twitter, absolutely not. Off. Under no circumstances.
Which I don't think ever. most kids or teens care
not
about
anymore, but teens, later teens in high school. Yeah. It's kind of like a news thing. It's a sports thing. If your child loves sports, it's big. You know, people love to follow it on that. Absolutely not. That is the worst possible app. That is literally a pornography app at this point. Do not touch X.
So parents, I don't know. I didn't know that either, because I've only heard of X and what was once Twitter was like a news feed, but there's no parameters on.
Absolutely none. It was soon as it was bought by Elon, they literally took everything off of it. I mean, you could just be searching anything and all of a sudden you're seeing porn, and even worse than like a Pornhub, I would say, because it's completely unvetted. At least a Pornhub vets their own thing so they don't get sued. But on X, anyone can post whatever they want. And if they have a problem, they delete the account and there's no accountability for it. So you could potentially see things that are legitimately crimes, and it's terrible. Yeah. So I would say X, absolutely not. But I would even go further. Instagram is a horrible app. That to me is the gateway. My own addiction my own problem with sexual integrity, my own addiction started with Instagram. That was the place. And that's the story of every single person that I've talked to about this struggle. It always starts on Instagram. And it's because of this soft porn type stuff. You know, it's following Instagram models and all these other things. And I personally think there's no way to lock down Instagram. They have no restrictions that you can in place. I mean, even the ones that they say are like, oh, if you have a child under 16, use these restrictions. It's not going to protect them entirely. They're going to see things that they don't need to see. And then, I mean, I think Snapchat is from the devil as well. Just because that one's less so about like what you might see and more so your friends. You know, I had friends in junior high school who were literally catfished and blackmailed.
That's terrible.
And that's a very frequent thing that's happening. And Snapchat is typically the mode for that sort of thing. So
To me, Instagram was the most interesting one, because I've only known Instagram as like, you know, that's where everyone put their pictures.
Right.
But then there's like this whole gateway that goes into not so great thing. So parents, again, like, you know, Insta, everyone's like, well, even adults, yeah, like everybody's on that, but you have to recognize the access that that brings. Right. We'll come back to that in a minute with some of the algorithms. And like you've mentioned a few times, how these social media companies work.
Right.
So I think there should clearly be rules and don't trust that just that you have to be 13 years or older to sign up. No. Like it, even at 15, 16, 17 years old, it doesn't mean that it's right for them. Mm-hmm. There needs to be guidelines. There needs to be protections for them that you aren't just like assuming that every app is
right,
safe and fine to have right, on your kid's phone.
And I would just say, I think it's a bald-faced lie for people to say, oh, but I can't go to college or be in high school without an Instagram or anything. Right. I did it. I had no problems whatsoever. Right. And that's a common story for everyone. I seriously cannot think of a positive benefit that would even come close to making it worth it.
That's interesting.
Because I mean, even once you start to use it for its purpose that it was originally built for, if you know, like this is for you to keep track of your friends and all that. No, then you get caught up in follower counts. Then you're watching other people's Instagram posts where they're only posting the good things that are happening in their life. And that brings a comparison cycle. And so there's genuinely no positive reason to have an Instagram. And TikTok for another reason, which we'll talk about with the algorithms.
Yeah. So parents, I mean, again, the social media piece, like just don't just give your kid this. If you think they're ready for a smartphone, just don't assume that that means they're ready for every social media app to be on their phone. Now, accountability, I think, is also an important thing to have in place. You should know the passwords on your kids' phones. You should have access to every app that they're on. Because again, it's like you said, AJ, the wild, wild west, your kids, especially when they're young. Well, you're going to say in a minute, like the way the brain is formed, I've mentioned this in some other podcasts, that your kid's brain isn't even fully formed before 25 years old. Their full ability to reason and to have logic is not even there. So we cannot give them access to this thing and assume they're going to make good choices. Right. We need to hold them accountable. Again, that goes back to responsibility, training your kids as they go to understand like this phone can be for good and it can be for bad.
Right. But I would also say take it away, like with accountability, take away this, even if it's not stated, this impression that their phone is theirs. It's not. Don't ever let your child think that their phone is theirs. Mm-hmm. Don't ever let them think that it's their own private world. So, I mean, one thing that I would have said would have been really helpful for me is every night at dinner, you know, tell me about your day, your highs and lows. Tell me about what you did on your phone today.
Right.
Tell me about where were you scrolling? What were you doing? Because that little layer of accountability of talking about it, of knowing that if you have the password to my phone, you can go look at it. That's really helpful. For especially when it comes to like addiction and lust and all of those sorts of things, knowing that you are not in private, you are not in secret, none of this is hidden, is incredibly helpful in deterring a lot of that stuff, especially for young kids.
That's a good point. And one good practical suggestion might be, like, especially if you're just starting out with the phone, would be like to do a 30-day trial and build from there. Teaching responsibility, see how they do with having just the flip phone in their pocket. Even when they get older, and if you do give them the smartphone, like what are the things that you're on a trial basis every 30 days checking in on things, especially if you let them put one of those apps on their phone that you're checking in on that regularly. Because AJ, like you said, it's like guardrails for them. It's for their protection. And I think parents, if we can get in that mindset rather than like, what am I holding my kid back from? It's what am I protecting my kid from? That if we don't do that, the damage that can do, and we're seeing that in our young people today. And then the last thing on the boundaries is just helping your kids, again, responsibility, understanding the future impact, that the things that you post on social media, like future employers, scholarships, universities can look at all of that. And so that's, again, something for your kids to be like, this isn't like some anonymous world.
Right.
People can have access to that and are going to see the things you've posted, the things that you've commented on, and the impact that could have on a future. I don't know if you have any examples of that, Age.
I mean, nothing that I would want to say out loud.
But you know.
I know, absolutely. I know a lot of people who were considerably hurt by some stupid thing that they said when they were 15.
Yes.
And now they're trying to get a job and you know, fresh out of college. And it's like, sorry, nothing you can do about that. And the internet is forever. I mean, it's important for kids to understand that. But I would say it's important for parents to understand that and to help their kids to understand. Like the way that I would describe this is, what's the consequence if you're not strict with your kids with their phones? Enormous. You know, they could end up addicted to not only their phone, but to pornography, to drugs, to other things. They could hurt their future and their ability to get a job later in life. It could hurt their social skills. It could make it so they're almost incapable of getting married one day because they don't know how to interact with people. But what's the consequence if you do that? Okay, maybe they have a little bit of a harder time in high school. Mm-hmm. Maybe they have a little bit harder time making friends or keeping friends or being in social circles. Okay, great. That's resilience. It's teaching them something at the very least. And so that's what I would say is the dangers of it are so much higher
Well, we're getting ready to talk about that here in a minute, but just to summarize that real quickly. So some of those boundaries are the screen time limits, social media rules, having accountability with your kids, and then just talking to them about that future impact. So now, AJ, to what you just said, I think this is good for us to talk about some of those hidden dangers. Like, what are the hidden dangers parents oftentimes miss? And honestly, for me, this is something I've just learned in the last couple of years, maybe because we're starting to see reports and the studies that are coming out, like the algorithms. You mentioned this earlier. Those companies see what you like and keep, explain that.
Yeah, algorithms are fascinating. It's one of the, it's very hard. It's one of those things where it's so shrouded in mystery that it's hard to even put a finger on it. And that scares me. But algorithms are the most important thing for any social media app. This is what they spend all of their money on. This is what they're trying to cultivate. This is why TikTok is as popular as it is. And every single social media is trying to replicate TikTok's algorithm. And the reason why, and one of the things that we do know about it, they literally keep these like under lock and key. No one knows. This is like proprietary information. I mean, it's as secure as like Fort Knox, because that's how important and powerful these things are. But one of the things we know about TikToks and what all of them are using now is they actually studied gambling addiction in Las Vegas. They would go to Las Vegas, they go to slot machines, and they would say, okay, how does a slot machine work? Mm. How does it keep people here? How does it addict them? And they realize it's this combination of showing something that you like and that you don't like. And so for TikTok, it's less so now. They've updated their algorithm, but it used to be if you scrolled on TikTok, you could scroll 8 times and it would give you 8 videos in a row. And then on the 9th scroll, it would refresh and load something new. And that's because one of the things that they learned is that you could actually addict someone by showing something that you know they'll like every 8 videos and then showing something you know that they won't like. And so they continue to scroll and they continue to go into that cycle because they're trying to get that hit. And so these algorithms, one, are trying to addict you, but two, they're trying to learn every little thing about you. They want to know exactly what makes you tick, mostly because they want to sell that information to someone, because eventually, even for kids, it's going to be very valuable for shopping patterns, for insurance, or for other things like that. And so these algorithms are designed to learn everything about you and then to shape you into what they want you to do. So if you are someone who's, you know, risk averse, or if you're someone who is cautious and doesn't like to spend money, maybe they're literally going to try and shape you away from that. You can even see some of these algorithms. This is what's most dangerous about TikTok, is it's controlled by a foreign entity.
Yeah.
And so if they want to start to shift your mindset on a certain issue, they're going to do that. They're going to feed you certain things that are going to subliminally mark different parts of your brain and leave bad taste in your mouth for certain things, or make you like other things. It's total control over that. And so it's shaping your identity, and it's influencing you almost entirely subconsciously.
Well, and I think it's interesting, like in recent news events and stuff, and you hear the word radicalized. They were radicalized online. Well, it's like what you're saying, these algorithms, if you're just being constantly fed a certain viewpoint or challenging something that just, you feed on that. And that's all that ends up in your feed. Like, I know that even for me, like on Facebook Reels, as soon as I stop on like a cookbook or a baby video, or like I watched the eaglets when they were born last year. I mean, my feed was like full of baby animals and cooking shows and stuff. So it's like, it's learning things about me. So parents, to be aware of the fact that those algorithms are real. And so if your kid starts hitting on more sexually explicit things, that's what their feed is going to start to be full of. And like you said, that's going to start leaving an imprint on the brain. That's the dopamine hits. And that's going to start to create an addictive cycle in them. Okay, so then the comparison culture, I think just recognizing that when they're on Instagram, they're seeing all those things, like it's creating identity confusion. It's creating body image issues. I don't think parents fully understand, especially those of us that maybe aren't active on social media, like how big of a deal that is and how it impacts. And that's why the anxiety and depression is building, because people are looking at their life saying, my life is boring, or I don't get to do that, or they do this, or I was left out of that party because I'm not in any of those pictures. I didn't even know it was happening. Just that comparison culture that's real, and that those algorithms and the social media apps want to feed that. Now, the private messages, this is kind of interesting to me, and I know that this has become more and more of an issue, but parents need to be aware of the fact that even on these gaming, I think that's part of what happened with Roblox for these young kids. This ability for you to like have private conversations. Do you have any information on that?
No. I mean, most of these apps have that private conversation feature, and it's a huge world with no restrictions whatsoever. And so you get creeps or other people who have bad intentions and they
so they just pose as a kid.
Yeah.
They just
act like there's no way for a kid to know that it's not a kid.
Right. So parents, you need to be aware of the fact that then in these gaming apps and in these other apps, like there's ability to like private message and you don't know who your kid's talking mm-hmm. to and you don't know if they really are who they say they are. And so the sexual pressure, the grooming, cyberbullying, all those things can be very real. And I just think don't assume that even in a kid's video game that there aren't, like you said, creeps out there that want to infiltrate that mm-hmm. and impact your kids. Okay, now the sexual content, AJ, we've already talked a little bit about this and you were pretty strong on X and Instagram, but mm-hmm. the sexual content, I do think this is important for parents to realize that kids are like the first age of being exposed to porn is like 11 years mm-hmm. old now. When was the first time you were exposed to porn?
I mean, I was fortunate that it was much later in life. It was when I was 16.
Okay.
So it wasn't, I didn't have a typical yeah. trend line in that way, but that's because of a lot of the protections yeah. that we had put in beforehand and the general environment that I lived in. But this reason alone is reason enough to not let your kid have a phone until mm-hmm. they're 16, 17, 18, even into college, because the dangers that are presented with the sexual content online are unparalleled. I mean, this is the single greatest issue facing our time today. Almost all of the greater societal issues we're struggling with can find at least some part of its root in the sexual content online, mm. in sex addiction, in porn addiction, all these things. And it all starts with kids at 11, 12, 13 years old. I mean, all of my friends, I couldn't think of a friend right now that I went to high school with that didn't struggle with it before they were in junior high school. And it starts in, everyone's different, but the brain is at this age is so wired for seeking that out that as soon as you get that spark and you have the ability to go find it somewhere, you're going to do that.
Right.
You can't expect a kid to have the discipline to not seek that out. I mean, this is something that happened, you know, even back when there was just Playboy magazines.
Right.
But the difference is back then, if you saw a Playboy or your friend showed you a Playboy, you're at your friend's dad's house and they had a Playboy magazine. It was like, okay, I have to go back there. Or I have to right. get old enough to be able to go buy it at the store. Like I can't go get it. So then I'm, you know, it's in my mind and then, okay, it goes away because and then I'm out playing sports again or whatever and it doesn't matter anymore. But for kids today, they see it online and they don't even have to go and find pornography. They can stay in that soft porn realm and it's the same exact thing. Neurologically, it is the same exact thing. And what it is doing is it's ruining the brain of that kid. Hmm. It is addicting them. And not only is it addicting them, but kids are so much more susceptible to addiction. And not only will they get addicted to pornography and that will turn into its own whole thing, but they actually are more susceptible to different addictions then as well. And one of the biggest ones is social media addiction or just internet addiction in general. But in this realm of, you know, falling into addiction, kids, their brains get flooded with dopamine. And then there's this thing called the Coolidge effect, which is you need novelty. And so what kids will do is they'll be looking at pornography, they'll fall deeper into it. And then all of a sudden, that's not arousing
right,
anymore.
Right.
And so they need more. And the Coolidge effect is if you continue to show more novel and different and weirder and more unusual and more violent and more terrible things, yep. then you get a kick out of that. The young, especially male brain is designed for that unusual. This is that thrill seeking thing that everyone, every young, yeah. especially teenager deals yeah. with. But what that does then is it throws you into this cycle of deeper and deeper addiction and more and more shame, especially. And so I would just say it's so important to keep your kids away from this
yeah.
from an early age, because if you fall into it, even at 16, 17, 18, those same patterns, even if you do still fall into addiction in that way, even if they were to go crazy in college or whatever and get addicted, it is a completely different neurological set of circumstances. Mm. So much easier to get out of, so many less ruts and problems yeah. later in life because of it. And you can protect them from a lot of these really damaging things that can affect a kid way later into life, even into when they're parents.
Okay, so parents, again, I mean, and really the sexual content, very important, but just having these clear boundaries in place that are really, really important, and that these hidden dangers, especially the sexual content, like that's a real thing. And it's happening on the normal app that you see on your phone. It's Instagram. Like it's Snapchat. It's these things that you might assume are safe and good. No, there's danger and you need to pay attention to that. So to land the plane today, just some strategic frameworks maybe for you parents to think about, you know, having been posed with these questions. Like in elementary school, I mean, I think I would say no smartphone at all, like maybe a flip phone. Again, answering that question, when's my kid ready? It's like, well, what are they ready for that kind of responsibility, whatever that looks like? But that the focus really in the elementary age, if they do get a phone, a dumb phone, would be obedience and trust. Mm-hmm. Like they're obedient to your rules and the limits that you set. They're showing responsibility and they're in building trust with you so that as they get a little bit older and you feel like, okay, they do need a smartphone. Okay, well, they're earning trust with you, following your rules, and then you'll just continue to develop those rules. So then in middle school, you'd have to have like really strong boundaries in place. Again, I would say if I could do it over again, I wouldn't have let you guys have a smartphone. Mm-hmm. I know that's hard for parents, but if I could do it over, I would say no smartphone in the middle school, junior high age. And really the focus then, if they do, is really about wisdom and self-control. Because again, like you know, through all of our Pursue God resources, it's all about shepherding and training your kids up so that they can be independent, healthy, full-functioning adults. So if we're just controlling everything, they're not learning the skills. So even in junior high, high school, like how do we use a phone? AJ, some of the things like you said at dinner, like we would ask you guys every day, give us the highs and lows. How was your day? What did you do with your phone today? Mm-hmm. Where have you been today? Looking at the phone, talking about the potential dangers, giving them space to share. Like I saw this on Instagram. I mean, I remember many times you coming and saying, I remember one time you saying on the golf team, like you were just playing around the golf and mm-hmm. a senior showed you something on mm-hmm. their phone. Like there's some things parents that we cannot control because other kids are going to be the problem. But at least for what you're doing to protect your kids and with the phone, that it's about teaching them like to be wise, to have self-control, to not just give them this phone and let them be free will in it, doing whatever they want. And then in high school, again, you're just really getting to ownership and integrity. Because when they go off to college, it's like, okay, this is your life and you're going to have to, I can't protect you from those consequences anymore. So parents, honestly, just to end today, well, AJ, I don't know. Do you have something to say to that about these frameworks, about just how parents should view it in terms of obedience and trust, wisdom, self-control, and then ownership and integrity?
I mean, I would just continue to say, treat it like a car. Treat it like the tool and honestly the weapon that it is and the danger that it can be. Like I said, if a kid had taken a car at 16 and driven somewhere and came back, you wouldn't be afraid to ask them, hey, where'd you go today?
Right.
And it's the same thing on a phone. It's the same thing to encourage that accountability, that ownership, that integrity, to be like, no, this is a very powerful thing and you need to be aware of it and not to be like controlling on it. And don't make it think that it's a controlling thing where you're like, no, you can't have the phone because I'm trying to control you.
Right.
No, this is a weapon. This is a dangerous thing. It's a tool that can be used for good, but it's also a very dangerous thing. And keeping kids aware of that reality.
Yeah,
can be,
I think that's
helpful.
Good. I think that car analogy is good. So to end today, Romans 12:2 says, don't copy the behavior and customs of this world, but let God transform you into a new person by changing the way you think, and then you'll learn to know God's will for you, which is good, pleasing, and perfect. And so parents, my encouragement to you with this field guide and challenging you with some of these questions is don't just let your kids have a phone because everybody else is doing it. Take some time to really think about, what am I putting in my kids' pocket? Are they ready for that? How am I protecting them from some of these things that are out there in this digital world? And how am I conforming and helping them to learn, like, to go God's way, to learn to be obedient to the Lord and to his principles versus what the world has to say? Because AJ, like you said, there's all sorts of stuff. Kids can go find whatever they want on the internet. It's out there for them to find. But as parents, we're supposed to be shepherding their heart and training them to understand God's way is always best. And if we allow him to transform us and to make us new every day and to trust that his way is better and that he is good, then we will know God's purpose and plan for us. And we don't have to fall into depression and anxiety and the comparison culture and sexual addiction, because you've helped to train your kids to know how to handle this responsibility of this phone and what social media and all of that brings. So parents, I hope this was helpful to you. AJ, thank you for being here today and sharing some of your wisdom and insight and experience. And parents, I hope that you really take some time to think about it, pray about it, and I wish you good luck in this endeavor with your kiddos.
Thanks for listening. If you would like to give to help support our ministry, please visit pursuegod.org/donate. Find more resources to talk about these topics with your small group, family, or mentor on pursuegod.org.